I want you to consider a scenario. If someone stopped you on the street and asked you to share an important story from your life, what would it be? When Versify does this, we find that people really like to share about how they met their partners.
My eyes open, and then I started flirting with this other fella that was around, and anyway, that's who I married.
I'm going to tell you the story of how I met my wife. Long story short, how long should this go? Because there's probably several versions.
And I meet this guy, and somehow it was, you hate to say kind of love at first sight.
And in one unusual case, we had a daughter tell us about the literally painful beginning to the relationship between her father and mother.
So she gets thrown off the horse, she's put in the hospital, basically her butt's in a sling, her ass is broken, and it's Thanksgiving. And she's by herself because her family couldn't get into town. Well, my dad was at Millington with the Marines, and a couple of those guys decided they would go visit people that were stuck in the hospital over the holidays. And that's how he met my mom. You could never plan that. And they've been married 50 years.
Today, we're hearing about love at first sight. And after a short break, we'll be back with an in-depth story of jet setting, serendipity, and a bit of suspicion. From Nashville Public Radio, PRX, and the Porch Writers Collective, I'm Joshua Moore, and this is Versify.
Thanks for listening to this podcast. If you'd like to support this work, you can make a donation at WPLN.org.
There's a trope in romantic comedies where a couple of uncommitted 20-somethings bump into each other at a bustling, typically metropolitan public space and, upon locking eyes, fall breathlessly, if somewhat unconvincingly, in love. It's called a meet-cute. That uncanny first encounter where the unexpected chemistry of strangers can seemingly only be accounted for by celestial intervention. And while for Marcia and Brent Barker, there was never any brushing of thumbs while reaching for the same cut of tuna at the supermarket, their first meeting was certainly uncanny. Both were career-focused world travelers who were barely in the same city long enough to get tea. But fate seemed to intervene for these two. Marcia and Brent came across the Versify booth while stopping off at a Nashville bookstore on their way to Jazz Fest in New Orleans. And Marcia is sitting down to share their story with poet Joe Kane. Though she knows how unoriginal these types of stories can be.
Sometimes I share this story of how I met my husband with girlfriends, or sometimes it comes up at a dinner party, how different couples have met, and everyone thinks their story is wonderful.
But be that as it may, there was definitely something serendipitous in the way that Brent and Marcia first met. It was 1991, and Marcia was completely devoted to her career. For nearly 20 years, she worked for big-time telecoms and traveled widely.
And I really didn't worry much about getting married, having children. I just thought that would all happen. I was getting on the other side of 35. I wasn't married. And at some point, it occurred to me, maybe I've kind of missed this. Have I missed the opportunity while I'm having such a wonderful career, traveling, seeing the world?
She'd landed in Washington, D.C. for an explicit one-year assignment. No plans to put down roots.
And I remember one weekend opening up the Washingtonian magazine, and they had a fabulous article about an Episcopal church in Old Town Alexandria, Virginia, right across the Potomac River from Washington, D.C.
The photos in the story really caught her. This church, that dated back to the Civil War era, was founded by philanthropic pastors and attended by a wide array of young and old parishioners.
And that day I decided, I think I'll go there next Sunday. So that Sunday came, and I had been sporadically attending church. And let me say, my mother in Michigan had many times said, "You should go to church. You'll meet a nice boy." And I thought, what do mothers know? And this is way before you had anything. There's no internet. There's no way to meet people through the ways people meet people online now.
So she took a ride to historic old Alexandria, arrived early.
So that day I walked in to this beautiful room, sunshine streaming through, and I see a very handsome man talking to some elderly women. And in those days, you didn't have cell phones, so you couldn't stand around checking your phone. If you went into a room, you had to like walk up and introduce yourself. Mm-hmm. So I went up, I said, "I'm Marcia Downs," was my maiden name. And Brent Barker was the man, the very handsome man. And so the older ladies, introduced me to him. We all started chatting. It was very friendly. And I noticed right away he didn't have a wedding band on. I distinctly remember noticing that.
And for the moment, that was it. But Marcia was intrigued by this handsome stranger. So she decided to return the next Sunday. And there, waiting by the door, was Brent.
And he asked if I would mind if we sat together. So I thought, well, this would be really nice. So we sit together. We start learning that he's in the State Department. He's a diplomatic security agent, travels the world. And I had always wanted to be a foreign service officer and work at embassies. So I thought this was really interesting.
That same day after church, Brent invited Marcia to get tea with him.
When you met Brent that first day and he asked you out for tea, what was going through your mind?
I was immediately attracted to him and was very interested in going out with him. And I was in a panic because I had three girlfriends who were hosting brunch that day. And I remember thinking, if I'm very late, you know, this is going to be a problem. So I told Brent about this. I said, well, you know, I'm supposed to have brunch. So we just decided we would have one quick cup of tea. So it was kind of a rushed affair.
And then the first obstacle for their budding love. And the memory makes Marcia a little embarrassed.
He offered to walk me to my car. He's very gentlemanly that way. And I couldn't remember where I had parked my car. This is how discombobulated I was. It's a very historic town. Every street is, you know, very charming. They all look alike. So I'm like, I think it's here. I think it's there.
And all the while, Marcia's friends were getting worried.
I decided not to try to go into a store. You had to use payphones back then.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided I would just be late, but I would get there as soon as I could. By the time I got to Zakia's condominium, they were getting ready to call hospitals because they couldn't figure out what had happened. They were convinced I must have had a car accident because I think I was like an hour late. And they said, you know, this something has happened to Marcia.
You're not usually the kind of person to stroll in after the bell?
Not at all. Not at all. So I was very interested in him from the beginning. Almost, I mean, love at first sight is kind of corny, but I was very attracted to him from that first meeting.
So there was no doubt about the attraction, but there were challenges to come. Those same friends that had the brunch Marcia missed, they were wary of Brent. He seemed to blow Marcia off a lot, with suspicious reasons.
And then he invited me out on a date. But before that date occurred, he called me and said, I'm sorry, but I've got to leave town. I think it was the ambassador in Colombia is under a death threat and we have to leave immediately. He was on a mobile security team, so they would head off. So I was like, okay, that's kind of strange, but okay. And he sent me a postcard. I thought that was nice. And then I think we had one dinner date and then our next date was canceled. He said, you know, I'm sorry, but I've got to go to Syria. You know, there's some problem and we've got to head over there. So after this happened, maybe three or four times, I would tell my best friend, Carolyn, Brent is really interesting, but we've only had two dates and he keeps being sent away on these missions. And she looked at me, probably the fourth time, she said, Marcia, face it, he's married. And I said, you know, I don't think so. I think he really has this job at the State Department. Every time they have to evacuate Americans, whatever, they have to send the mobile security team.
Eventually, that friend bought into Brent, and he bought Marcia an engagement ring. And they were married in that same Episcopal church where they first met.
We had our reception in the room where we first met, the room that they had the Sunday school classes in. And we've been traveling the world ever since, because his next assignment was to be the regional security officer at an embassy or a consulate. And at that point, I was working in China frequently for Northern Telecom. So he had never been to China, but I said, why don't we bid on Shanghai? Because I love Shanghai. Mm-hmm. Out of all of the places in the world he could get, he got Shanghai.
And the list goes on. Shanghai, the Fiji Islands, Lithuania, plus two sons born along the way.
And I guess the favorite part of my story when I tell this to people is that I'll say that all of my girlfriends at the time who were either divorced or like me were single and they were in their late 30s, mm-hmm. heard this story. They all decided to go to church and give this a try. And it was an abysmal failure for every one of them. They all had horrible situations, didn't meet anyone nice. Maybe, I think one of them is maybe an atheist as a result. Two of them are total agnostics. But for me, it worked. And so my husband, Brent, was really an answer to my prayers because I remember praying that I would meet someone like him. And what are the chances that he had read the same Washingtonian magazine and decided at the same time? We later verified that's he had never been to that church.
That was his
until
first visit, and
his
also because of the Washingtonian.
And I've saved that copy that I had of the Washingtonian magazine.
And think about this. Marcia had been traveling, often to China and Europe. And Brent had been in the Army for 10 years. And then traveling, often without notice, for the State Department. But they both paused to read that magazine.
And frankly, not that many city magazines do in-depth stories on churches these days. And that was, you know, 25 years ago. And that we both read it and thought that the next Sunday we would attend and that we met.
It makes you kind of believe in fate.
It does. It makes you a believer.
Yeah.
And so to this very day, I'll say to people, especially younger people, you know, don't discount going to church. You might meet somebody really, really great there. I did. Not saying that it wasn't fabulous to be focused on my career all those years, but I realize now what a disappointment it would have been had I not found love.
I was just going to ask you about that, like, because it seems like you had a really fulfilling career and life. You weren't worried about finding someone for so long. So when it first started kind of being on your mind, what were you looking for? What did you realize that you wanted?
By the time you get to your upper 30s, you've met a lot of people and watched a lot of relationships break up. And it makes you maybe a little skeptical, maybe a little nervous about finding a really good person. But when you meet, I guess my message for other people would be, you don't really have to worry too much because when you meet the right person, it just happens.
One more quick question. So after almost 24 years of marriage.
May 29th this year.
What's one thing about your husband that makes you happy on a Monday?
I would say it's that every morning we like to have our coffee and tea together. I'm off caffeine, so now I'm on tea. But we always read the newspapers together. Mm-hmm. Even if he gets up before I do, we read the New York Times, the Seattle Times, he gets the Wall Street Journal. And over our morning paper, we talk about the day, we talk about what's going on in the world. And I love that time in the morning. And now that we're retired, we can actually extend that time. We're not in such a rush, but we always did that even when our kids were young, even when he was working, when I was working, we would get up extra early so that we had that time to read the papers in the morning and just the two of us be together over the coffee and tea.
That sounds beautiful.
It is.
Well, thank you so much, Marcia. This has been a real treat listening to your story. Give me a few minutes to work with.
Good luck with that.
Crafting something, and I'll see you in a few to give you your poem.
You know, it's been so much fun to talk about it, and I'm kind of like tearing up because it's such a happy part of my life. So whatever you come up with, I'll be happy with because it's just been fun to share it with you.
Well, it's been lovely to listen to.
Thank you
so much.
How will Joe turn this story into a poem? That's after the break. And we'll also pull Joe and Marcia aside to ask each of them how it felt to connect over such a personal story. You're listening to Versify.
In the 1960s, Rip Patton joined a movement of students protesting segregation, from sit-ins in Nashville to the Freedom Rides down to Mississippi, where he was thrown in prison.
If you don't stop singing, we're going to take your mattress. They opened the gate, we threw the mattresses out in the hallway. That didn't stop us from singing. Ain't gonna let no mattress turn me around.
I talked to Rip about being a disruptor and to dozens of other fascinating people about why they do what they do. Listen to these conversations on Movers and Thinkers from Nashville Public Radio. Find it on your podcasting app or at podcasts.wpln.org.
He's a very good listener, and so It was like he was hanging on my every word.
This is how Marcia felt while sitting across from Joe Kane. And while he didn't totally divulge to her, he was feeling something similar.
I was really resonating with that story because I personally don't really believe in like fate and destiny and all that stuff. But I started believing in it more after I met the love of my life, who you know.
Very special lady, very special lady.
Yeah, it's a similar thing. It's just like when you meet that right person, I think it's such a beautiful thing that it's hard not to believe that the universe didn't want you to be together.
Is there anything right now that like stands out to you that you think will definitely make it into the poem?
There is. And it's just when she was talking about that initial feeling and that she was worried about finding a good person. And then she said, you know, I would tell people today, don't worry, because when you find the right person, it just happens.
Hmm.
And I was like, I love that. It's like when you find the right person, it just happens. Yeah.
I feel like you're a resident love poet.
I mean, I have a lot of love in my heart.
For this love story, Marcia was the one to share it. And while she did, her husband Brent, the avid reader that he is, browsed the shelves in the bookshop where we'd set up our microphones. But an hour later, as Joe finished, Brent joined Marcia to hear the result.
So I'm back here with Marcia, and this time she brought Brent along. And Marcia told me a love story about how she and Brent met. And that's my favorite kind of story. So I really enjoyed hearing it, and I really enjoyed spending some time with it. And this is the poem that came out of that. I'm not in the habit of saving magazines. Years of traveling for work turns packing light into a religion. But if you look in my closet, you'll find one issue of the Washingtonian pressed between two pieces of cardboard. When I first read the article, I had been traveling light for years. No relationships that couldn't fit into an airport locker. It was a personal interest piece on some Episcopal church across the river. They sounded like nice people. And my mother always told me that if I wanted to meet a nice man, I needed to go to church more often. But what could an old woman in Michigan know about love in the 90s? Sometimes, when I tell this story, I say that when I walked into that fellowship hall, my first words were, "Damn! I hate it when my mother's right." But the truth is, I wasn't thinking about anything but the man in front of me. Couldn't even remember where I parked when he asked to walk me to my car. Thank you, God, for helping me talk politics and travel, which were my native waters before being set adrift on Brent's brown-eyed ocean. 24 years later, we're still talking politics, only now it's over our newspaper, drinking our tea. I love the way that you wait for me to read the headlines on the days you wake up first, and the morning that you said, it's just not news if you don't hear it. I'm still packing light, but now the tickets are for two. I used to worry that any man would ground me. Didn't know how all that closeness would wait for my days off, or wait through my off days. But you know, when you meet the right person, it just happens.
That's so beautiful. Thank you, Joe.
It was very literally my pleasure.
Very literally. Well, you are the first poet that I really know, and it's just an honor to have this poem about our life story. Thank you so much.
Well, it's an honor to hear it, and to be the first poet you know. My God.
I mean, personally.
You. Well, we'll have to keep in touch, and you meet many more in the future.
That suggestion from Joe is not an empty promise. He's been with Versify from the beginning, and really does make connections with these strangers at the mic. And Marcia and Brent, they're left wondering how Joe pieced together some parts of their story. Really, some details were Joe's embellishments, but they were right on.
I think it, in a very elegant way, summed up what happened and how we just happened by pure chance to meet, but it developed into something and went further and further.
Oh my gosh. The fact that the magazine is specially saved and that traveling light through the world was kind of the way I was moving. I don't know how you picked up on that, you know, moving from point to point, not putting down a lot of roots, and that being with Brent has really just opened the world even more. Somehow you seem to capture that the day that I walked into that church was the beginning of a whole new chapter in my life.
Since that first fortuitous encounter in a Virginia Episcopal church, Brent and Marcia have added many a page to that chapter. They're a couple that hardly slows down, but still make time to savor the world together as they go. Versify is a production of Nashville Public Radio and The Porch, which trains our poets and hosts our storytelling events. Editing for this episode came from WPLN's Emily Seiner, with additional editing by Anita Bug, Susanna Feltz, and me, Joshua Moore. The episode was co-written and produced by WPLN's Tony Gonzalez. Carl Peterson masters the show. The music is by Chris Zabriskie, found through the Free Music Archive. Versify is distributed by PRX. And tune in again to hear the beauty of how we can turn your life into poetry, one verse at a time.
Support for this podcast comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.